Good evening, you all. At this time, we begin the sickness. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And along with Mel, K2KEY, we run a thing called the TechNet, in which we try to answer people's questions on ham radio-related subjects. Well, the real subjects that are covered are anything of interest to ham radio operators. So that includes quite a bit of electronics and computers, all kinds of things. In fact, we might get into a discussion tonight of better ways of powering the electronics of an automobile. The way a person signs into the TechNet is to give Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the confirming yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for a net. So a typical sign-in would sound like this, M2EO, Rich, and yes. And Rich is a frequent signing-in person, you know what I'm trying to say. And so I use him as an example. So do we have any check-in time? Please give me your call letters and name at this time.
M2EO, Rich, and yes. Good evening, Dick.
Whiskey 2, Papa, November, Juliet, Bob, yes.
KT2, MDT, Steven, yes.
Good evening, Dick.
W2BIE, good evening, Dick, no.
WB2AAC.
Okay, so far we have Rich, Bob, Steve, Paul, Lou. Lou, you got to sign in more often. Nice hearing from you. And an extremely weak signal from somebody that sounded like WB2AAC. So you may have to do something to get through to make sure we can hear you, sir. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Yeah. Good evening, all. This is KEY.
Okay, Mel, of course. And Mel doubled with somebody. Who was the other person?
KC2CMO, standing by.
KC2CMO, it sounded like. Is that Charlie, Mike, Oscar? I heard KC2CMO standing by is what it sounded like. Please repeat your call, sir, and your name.
Yes, this is KC2CMO in the mobile, and the personal in this end is Dan Ford.
Okay, Dan Ford, and I think it's CMO Mobile, Charlie Mike Oscar Mobile. Do I have that correct, Dan Ford?
100%, 100%, yeah. We're just driving around, and the topic sounds very interesting. We need to, listen more and pay more attention to what's going on, so we'll be standing by and listening.
I understand, Dan Ford. Okay, anyone else to check in? Last call before we start rolling.
This is WC2C, Whiskey Charlie, 2 Charlie, Aaron, saying hello and supporting the net.
Very fine, Aaron, and we do need support in that corner of Brooklyn. Rich, what's the latest in White Zone, Rich? M2 Echo Oscar, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, still having trouble with the throat. I hope you'll put up with me. Wanted to give you an update on that meter that I was relabeling from 1 amp to 2 amps. What I did was I moved the meter scale, I scanned it into the computer using a flatbed scanner, brought it up with Adobe Photoshop. I was able to re-letter the meters, re-letter the scale. There's a mode, I forget what it's called, with in Adobe. I stayed up like all-nighter into the next day working on it. Was able to change the letters, angle the letters, move them around, drag them around within the meter scale on Adobe, printed it back out, saved the file, and put it into the meter, and looks like a factory job tick. K2RIW, M2EO.
Okay, sounds like a successful project to increase the ammeter on your afterburner, which as I remember you were adding an extra amplifier tube, readjusting the capacitor to inductor ratio, changing the number of turns on the inductor, and so on. Sounds like you're almost
near the end of that project. And as I gave you plenty of warning, you've got to be very careful that you have surgically clean conditions when you open up a meter. Because if there's one chunk of steel wool floating through the air anywhere in your house, when you open up a Dawson Bowel movement meter, that's the old-fashioned meters that you had on your triplet and the Simpson type of volt-ohm milliammeter, those kind of meters, when you open them up, are extremely vulnerable to little pieces of steel, microscopic particles that can fall into that magnet will make the meter itself very unreliable and sticky, and I've had a few of those. So you got to be careful. And sounds like you did. Sounds like it's working. And so I guess we're going to be hearing a pretty strong signal from you one of these days, Rich. Good luck with that project. Bob is the next person who signed in. Whiskey 2 Papa 9 November Juliet. Go right ahead, Bob. KQRIW.
Good evening, everybody on the net. I recently acquired an amplifier, and working 20 meters, something very unusual happened. My combination, my hardwired carbon monoxide smoke detector started to go off. Not right away, but after working about 5-10 minutes, she would start to, sound off and, alert, you know, carbon monoxide and whatever. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I'm hearing a number of stories like that, Bob. I also heard today about a guy who's on the 147.575 simplex net. This particular person quite frequently tows his boat around, and the boat has a separate set of brakes, the trailer for the boat. And when he keys his transmitter, the brakes go on real hard. So the RF pickup is false alarming his braking system on the trailer, and until he figured out what's going on, it was quite alarming. It could be a driving an accident causing thing, if you know what I mean. I am guessing that your carbon monoxide sensor is probably running from the 110 volt line, and the 110 volt line is what's giving it an antenna. And therefore, a lot of the RF energy from your transmitter picked up by the 110 line through, you're in Kings Park, so most likely it's being picked up by a LIPA line, Long Island Power Authority, and coupled straight into the meter. The first thing I guess I would try doing would be to try to plug it into a different place, relay out that wire, but I'm pretty sure the smart people on the net are going to suggest that you get a ferrite isolator type thing. I believe it's sold at Radio Shack. It comes in two clamshells, so to speak, these ferrite materials. You clamp it around the wire that goes into the smoke detector and put these two clamshells back together. And when you put a piece of ferrite around a piece of wiring, what you're doing is drastically increasing the series inductance of that wire. And therefore, RF energy that wants to flow down that wire essentially runs into an RF choke, and so it will attenuate at some significant number of dB. That's probably the best approach, to experiment with relaying out the wiring and or using the ferrite choke. The next step, of course, is to find out what is the sensitive stage inside and try to bypass it with a dis-ceramic capacitor. I don't recommend you do that. I'm guessing that the circuitry inside of a CO2 detector is kind of delicate. You'd like to not disturb its integrity by opening it up and possibly changing the calibration, because that is a serious piece of safety equipment and you'd like it to be in pristine condition. So as a last resort, until you get down to a last resort, my recommendation is don't open up the smoke detector or the CO2 detector itself. Try to stop it at the source. If it was running from a battery, I am guessing that wouldn't occur. However, of course, running from a battery, you have to worry about when the battery goes dead, are you still being given a safety warning from the device? So let's see if I'm correct that you're running from the power line, Bob. Drag your feet a little in case other people have suggestions on this one. W2PNJ detector, a little bit of delay. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. So I can get, you're talking about these toroidal magnets that are split. Is this what you're referring to?
I wouldn't call it a magnet, but yes, it looks a little bit like a magnet. It's a black material, which is split into two halves, and it's either got one or two holes through the center. And if you put the wiring through those holes and reclamp it, I think you're going to see a significant improvement in the amount of RF energy, which is picked up by the wiring of your house, and what percentage of it gets into the smoke detector. If you can stop it at the source, in the wiring, that's the safest way to go. I would call it a ferrite choke. I would call it a ferrite isolator. It is not a magnet. It looks like a magnet, but it's not a magnet. Those two pieces, when you put them together, will not suck themselves together, if you know what I mean. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. Let me see if I have it. Okay. I know they make some different sizes. I bought them for radio work. They work real fine. I put them on my... I had a problem with RF coming into my earphones out to 10 meters. And it worked great, you know, eliminated the distortion on the audio when I was transmitting on the earphone line. I can get them with a large diameter. I take, you know, the RGA size, and I can flip that right over the piece of 14-2 Romex going to that 4-inch round box up in the attic. I'll definitely try that. Thanks so much.
Yeah, let us know, Bob. You're one of the leaders on this one, so to speak. In other words, if I did a survey of the people who sign into the TechNet, I'm guessing that only a small percentage of them have a CO2 detector in their house. And that's unfortunate. To live without such a thing nowadays is a bit foolish. So depending on your success and or failure, come back and let us know as you start putting brand A and brand B of ferrite choke from Radio Shack or whoever onto it, and you either see an improvement or don't see an improvement, please come back and let us know what you find. And when you do pin it down, and when you do have the solution, I think it should be a hint and kinks in QST magazine, and we should make good use of it here at the TechNet. Thank you for any further comments, Bob.
A comment in 2EL.
So, okay, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, the team here are coming down the feed walking. I had a problem like that. What helps is what they call an isolator. What it is a, it's really just a piece of PC tubing with coax and a bunch of toroids that go in your mine. It's cheaper to buy it than to make it. One of the companies is a company called Buxcom. On the web at Buxcom.com. C-O-M. I think it's about $25. It's black. It's made out of PVC. It's got an SO239 on either end. Kind of looks like a ballon. Not a ballon. They recommend putting one at the antenna and one at the feed line where it comes into the shack. Works wonderfully, Dick.
Okay, so what Rich is recommending is the Buxcom isolator, which really is a little bit similar to a so-called ballon. Whether you call it isolator or ballon, it has strong similarity. In either case, if you took it apart inside of the PVC tubing, as Rich is mentioning, you're going to find a piece of RG8 with large toroids stacked on the outside of it, and all packed inside of this PVC piece of tubing. And once again, whenever you put these ferrite devices with a piece of wire going through it, whether it be a coax or a single lead or a double lead, doesn't matter, it drastically increases the inductance of the wire and therefore current doesn't flow down if on the outside. The balancing device is the right way to feed a dipole antenna with coax cable. And so if you've got a dipole with coax where the shield goes to one half of the dipole and the semiconductor goes to the other half, radio-wise, it works quite well, but you tend to end up with quite a bit of RF energy flowing down the outside of the cable if you don't use a ballon. So a combination of power supply wiring, choking device, and or this ballon or isolator, Buxcom, on your coax cable feeding your antenna, and I think the antenna end of it is where it's needed the most, not on the transmitter end. The transmitter end is the closest you can get to ground, and there I don't think it does quite as much, but that's an opinion. So back to you, Bob, for any further comments. Please come back and let us know how it goes in the future weeks. W2PNJ, K2RIW in the Tech Man.
Okay, fine business. Thanks for the input. I will go into action. I'll be on the side listening. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay, Steve is our next person. And Steve, KC2MDP, what would you like to talk about tonight?
Good evening, Dick. Good evening to everyone else out on the net tonight. Dick, I was curious. Did you happen to catch this week's Modern Marvels on the History Channel? It was on Wednesday night, I do believe it was 9 o'clock. You know, it was like one of their Modern Marvels engineering disaster type things. Basically, it was at the beginning. It was basically a story about this Texas tower in Texas, 1982. I think the tower was 1,971 feet. And they just finished putting the tower up. They were putting the antenna up on it. They were hoisting the tower with the gin pole. They had three guys on the tower, on the antenna itself. They had two guys on the tower. What happened is the U-bolts that the gin pole were bolted to the tower with were not strong enough to hold the weight of the antenna. The whole thing snapped. They showed the whole thing. And so three guys going down with the antenna. The antenna caught one of the guy wires and took the whole tower down with it. I was wondering if you caught that. I was really interested in that. You know, as hams, it really brought to light the disaster that can happen if you're not careful up there on a tower. Back to you.
It turns out that that exact scenario happens, I think, more than once per year somewhere in the United States. And what we're talking about here is that when you're constructing a tower that is held together with guy wires, and it's usually done with a crane operation and a gin pole. Gin pole really means you've got this tower-like thing, tower section-like thing, that you bolt to the top of the tower that you're constructing. It's got a pulley on the top, or maybe multiple pulleys. Rope goes over that pulley, and it hauls up the very next tower section. You install that tower section, bolt it on, move the gin pole up one tower section, and repeat the process. Well, when you're hauling a tower section or when you're hauling the gin pole itself, in either case, you're hauling a very strong piece of steel. If that piece of steel drops anything more than about 100 or 150 feet, it picks up enough velocity that if it hits a guy wire, it is capable of cutting through the guy wire if it hits the guy wire just right. And if you do cut a guy wire on a tower that's under construction, particularly if you cut a lower guy wire, opposite of common sense, the most dangerous guy wire to lose is the lower one, not the upper one. If you lose a lower one in that manner, by way of being hit with a heavy chunk of material that's falling under the influence of gravity, before that guy wire lets go, it's under maximum tension and the tower is bending in that direction. And when the guy wire does let go, the tower springs back in the other direction. It overcompensates. The tower jackknifes out away from the guy wire that broke. And as once it begins to do what's called a jackknife, you know, it bends in a horizontal U shape, so to speak, a vertical U is what I'm trying to say, the rest of the weight of the tower descends into the jackknife. All the other tower sections, the guy wires to them go slack, and the whole antenna system, the whole tower, becomes a pile of rubble with you in the middle of it. If you study, and I have, the tower construction accidents that happen in the United States each year, that scenario is the one that's most prevalent as far as causing maiming and loss of human life. As such, when I was constructing the tower on my property, I'm probably being overly conservative here, but I made sure that I'm hauling up the tower section with a block and tackle, multiple strands. The final descending strand coming out of the block and tackle went through a what's called a Jumar ascender. It's kind of a jam cleat, which will let the rope pull in one direction, but it jams in the other direction, so the rope cannot unravel, so to speak. If somebody lets go of it, it can't go free. Second of all, I made up a pair of nylon lanyards. Each one was about 6 feet long, with a a carabiner clip on each end. And one of those was connected to the tower that's standing. One of them was connected to the tower section being hauled up. And these pair of nylon straps, I would walk them up the tower as I was hauling up the next tower section. My philosophy of...